From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is the best of the business.
So you still want to do the show business, and you think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really got to rap and be all that, but prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
This week on the business, as Princess Leia, she was saved from the Empire by Luke, Han, and Chewie. As Carrie Fisher, she's had to rely on a higher power to save herself from drugs and alcohol. Plus, going to the big show, Show West. Stick around. It's the best of the business from KCRW. The girl who would become Princess Leia had already had a glamorous but difficult life as Hollywood royalty. She was born into the spotlight as the daughter of Debbie Reynolds and singer Eddie Fisher. He left them in a very public way for Elizabeth Taylor when Carrie was two. Her mom then married shoe store mogul Harry Carl, who would later bankrupt them. Carrie would grow up to have some love troubles of her own. She had a string of high-profile relationships and had a child by agent Brian Lord, who later left her for a man. Through it all, Fisher managed to maintain a successful creative career as an author, film and TV writer, and sometimes actress. She was also battling addiction and mental illness, and she's lived to tell the tale, with a biting sense of humor, in a one-woman show called Wishful Drinking that's now been turned into a book of the same name.
I married Paul at 26. We were divorced at 28. And then I went to rehab, not because I needed it, but because I was researching my book, Postcards from the Edge. I'd always written, but when I was 28, I was interviewed by a friend of mine for Esquire magazine. So I was written by a publishing house, and the letter came to my house and was forwarded to me at the rehab. So I was very glad to get any mail, but I was glad to get that letter, and I thought, yes, I'll write a book, and I know what the first line will be. It'll be, maybe I shouldn't have given the guy who pumped my stomach my phone number, but he'll probably never call me.
Back in December of 2006, Carrie Fisher invited us into her home in Bel Air to talk about drugs, alcohol, and Hollywood. Sitting around the dining room table of her 20s-era Spanish-style home, once owned by Betty Davis, Fisher talked to us while putting on her makeup for that night's performance of Wishful Drinking.
Carrie Fisher, welcome to the business.
Thank you.
I'm interested in how Hollywood's attitude, you know, how the business's attitude towards addiction has changed from, say, when your mom was working.
Oh, well, you couldn't talk about it then. I mean, then everything was concealed then. Because they wanted you to believe that movie stars' lives were truly glamorous. And, you know, people throng, they still do, I suppose, but they all just came to Hollywood thinking, I'm going to be a movie star, my life is going to be fantastic. And that people all thinking that you're fantastic will make you think you are fantastic. But to go back to your question, the attitude toward alcoholism is not as, but if you're an alcoholic, you're a live alcoholic, I mean, you're an active alcoholic, you're not going to get work. Although there are some that are very, very famous, and they are given more rope. And I'm actually thinking of one person in particular now, and I won't name the person, but she, has been getting away with getting loaded more than maybe somebody would. But this will not last. It can't last. Like in any job, you can't perform your job. So they don't put up with these shenanigans for that long.
And it's what the multinational corporations who own them.
It is a business.
Demand, right?
It is show business.
Tell me a little bit about how you figured it out. I mean, you start your monologue with, I'm Carrie Fisher and I'm an alcoholic, and it always gets a laugh. But you seem like you have created an identity for yourself now.
I am very sane about how crazy I am. I've made the maps of the bad places I've been, so if I get there again, I can get back out again faster. But that's not to say that I have not gotten there again. You know, it's not to say that I have been consistently sober, you know, since I first got sober, because I haven't.
Given how many careers get chewed up by this, and given how permissive Hollywood culture is to people who are at the height of their success, you know, there's probably too many stories to be told of people who are either top producers or top directors or top stars who, because of how much their movie or show was earning at the box office or getting in the ratings, it's excused. All right, so
drug addiction is excused?
I think so, no? Mm. Well, I should say bad behavior is excused.
Bad behavior, but not drug addiction. Mm-hmm. Bad behavior, yes.
But the two seem to go hand in hand.
Yes, but not employment. I've just found out there's one big person out there that I didn't realize that he was a drunkard, and I heard that he is. But he's, you know, these people feel, you know, they live a life of fear. They're being cut off here and there. This producer that would have worked with them, that was their friend, won't now. So at every turn, this bridge is now no longer, this door is no longer open, this one, this one, this one. Eventually it dries up. Any of them that you hear about, I do know about them more than you, because I'm probably seeing the same, you know, drug coaches or whoever the hell, or I've had them in the past. I do know these stories. I do know the inside, or I am in a position to run into these people sometimes or get a call from them myself. So I do know, and it is as ugly as anybody. The money and the blah and the access or whatever is as bad. It's as bad as any so-called regular person bottoming out. And it's worse because it's not supposed to be bad. They're supposed to be happy with all this stuff. And they've now blown the biggest. They've blown the dream. And they hate themselves for not being able to enjoy it. And the lie get bigger and bigger. And their crashes are from a higher place. Only when it becomes public for them, it becomes, depending on how big their stardom is, internationally known.
You've been on the cover of the National Enquirer, Princess Leia overdoses at...
All of these things, and inaccurate stories, but one of them literally did say, Carrie Fisher's tragic life, when I went into a mental hospital. That was literally how it was viewed.
Why do you think, given how many careers get sort of wiped out by this, that this is not something...
By drugs?
And booze, for that matter, I guess, but Hollywood seems to be a town of liberal causes, from, you know, breast cancer to AIDS research to you name it. But yeah. This is something that it's like a backyard problem that there doesn't seem to be a tremendous amount of effort to deal with mental illness, to deal with drugs and alcohol abuse.
Well, there's a little bit, but I don't know, because I think people do. There is still an element of where people think, if you just dealt with your willpower, you would be okay. Do you know what I mean? If you just buck up and try harder and really, you know, how could you have a problem with you who have so much, blah, blah, blah. But that is not going to get as much enthusiasm as illnesses where, you know, that are life-threatening. And alcoholism can be. But because there is, you know, people are participating in it, it is not as sympathetically looked upon. So,
because if it's within your hands, if you would just stop drinking, you wouldn't have this problem.
Because there are solutions. Because there are 12-step programs that truly can make a world of difference, and those are available.
How has the road to recovery changed as a function of how much scrutiny is applied to celebrity these days?
Well, that you have to. That it makes it, it gives a little more of a twist because it kind of, but you know, not much more. You can't let that matter. You have to matter more than what people think of you. And unfortunately, when you're a celebrity, a lot of your life is what people think of you. I mean, I had a celebrity staying here at my house because he didn't want to go to rehab. And I was trying to get him off alcohol. And it was insane because he did not want.
How did he approach you? Is a friend?
He found out, he met me, and he heard that I was in. So I took him to meetings, and I tried, and it just couldn't happen because you know what? You need to have that embarrassment. That's part of it, really. And the problem with a lot of celebrities is they think, I'm going to do it my special way. And so there are these doctors that are real shysters that will take an alcoholic or an addict, and they'll put them in a hotel room, and they'll detox them for $30,000 cash. And an idiotic celebrity or whatever will be willing to pay that to avoid going into the rehab where people will know. People will know.
The reason I ask is that there's some maybe support for the idea that Mel Gibson had to embarrass himself this way in order to, you know, embark on this road to recovery.
Let's hope that works for him, that's his bottom. Because like I said, the best thing, what I've heard is the best thing that can happen is that you're desperate and you go into AA desperate because then you're teachable. You're willing to say to someone who has a lot of sober time, tell me what to do and I'm willing to do it. I'll do whatever you say. And they'll tell you to be of service, and then you have to be of service to help other people and get your mind off yourself. And when you're a big famous actor, all you're thinking about is yourself. An actor alcoholic, an AA, you can use it there, is someone who's more self-obsessed than anybody. I mean, it's the main playing ground for the narcissist. Alcoholics are traditionally self-obsessed, and so are actors and actresses. So put them both together, and what do you got? That's a real cluster.
How badly do you think you have damaged your career?
I've damaged it for sure.
Do you still want to work?
I'm 50. What am I going to do in my career? Have like a big, people my age, women my age don't work that much anyway. And it's not like I was ever known as this fine, wonderful actor. And then I have my reputation. And it's not just a reputation as being, an addict. And I heard a rumor about myself that you never know with Carrie, that you hear she's sober, but then she's not. And I heard that this producer said it. She told it to Courtney Love. Oops, I shouldn't say that. But anyway, and it's not someone I know. So that's the MO on me, or it can be. But look, Robert Downey works. If you're really talented, I don't know if he can get. If you're really talented, you can make it fly. And if you're really, really willing to, really behave yourself, you can't be a former addict and be really difficult. That will not work.
When Carrie Fisher was just 2, her dad, Eddie Fisher, left her mom, Debbie Reynolds, for Elizabeth Taylor. That very public separation certainly played a part in her future addiction and relationship problems. I began thinking about Carrie's daughter, Billy. Her dad, Uber agent Brian Lord, left them for another man when she was still very small.
One last question that I'm interested in. You're a parent.
I am. That's her.
And there she is.
As if on cue, she sensed that I was being a parent all of a sudden.
What are the lessons you've tried to impart to
Billy? What
to
have
Billy?
I taught you?
Everything.
Everything and nothing.
Don't marry a gay man.
We'll probably leave it there. Carrie Fisher, thanks for being on The Business, and thanks for taking time before you go on stage.
Wishful Drinking, Carrie Fisher's book, adapted from her one-woman show of the same name, is now available in bookstores. By the way, Carrie was nominated this past year for guest starring as a nutty, pill-addicted writer on 30 Rock. If you think you or someone you love has a problem with drugs, alcohol, or another addiction, call 800-662-HELP for referral to local treatment options. That's 800-662-4357. Of course, even doctor-prescribed medication can cause problems for Hollywood types. Here's commentator Rob Long.
I once worked with a very talented actor who mostly worked in features. We didn't really know who he was when we were casting that particular role, but his agent and manager sent us his reel. That's a tape with a sample of some of his best work. And it was obvious from the first clip that he was a gifted, smart, winning, and very funny guy. And a few days later, he was in our office, we had a great meeting, and we cast him on the spot. But during production week, his performance was a little weird. I mean, he'd get it eventually after a few run-throughs, so we thought, well, you know, the guys from Features, where they do a zillion takes of everything, I mean, he'll get used to TV, which is pretty much a shoot-it-and-move-on kind of operation. So shoot night came, and there was still something off about him, a depressed kind of energy, like he was underwater or something. But by then it was too late to reshoot or recast, so we just plowed through, and a day or so later we were sitting in the editing room watching the actor float through the show like he'd been body snatched. We were baffled. What happened? Where did the electric performer from the agency reel go? Where was the guy from our office, the funny, engaging dude with the hilarious facial expressions? Where, in fact, were any facial expressions at all so crucial to the acting biz? You know, said our producer, watching the rough cut, it's probably the medication he has to take. One of the side effects is a severely depressed energy level. Medication? I asked. Yeah, it's like for some kind of brain thing. Our lead has a brain thing? Yeah, no, I didn't say that. In fact, I'm not even allowed to tell you which brain thing specifically or about the medication he has to take for it. I only know because I had to arrange the physical. See, actors in major roles always have to go for a complete physical exam to prove to the studio and to the studio insurers that they're healthy enough to theoretically last for the theoretical run of the series, which everybody hopes is, you know, 15 years. So let me get this straight, I asked. You knew all along that the lead actor in our comedy has a medical condition that forces him to take pills that make him boring, and you decided to hold this information back? Why? I didn't decide, our producer said reasonably. It's the law. And he was right, of course. Had he told us, we would have known all along that he was probably going to have to be recast. We would have figured out that the reason the actor was so great in Features and so personable and alive in the room was because he could make it through a 30-minute meeting or a set of multiple takes without too much trouble. But a sustained 6-hour shoot in front of an audience made his brain thing crave unfunny pills. Now, a few weeks ago, flipping through the channels late at night, I saw that same actor, and this is now several years after we worked together on that baffling and doomed pilot, but he was doing a public service announcement for his particular brain thing. You don't have to live with the shame and the embarrassment anymore, he was telling the TV audience at 2 a.m. There's powerful medication that can keep the disease in check, he said, chirpily, with energy and charm, and gusto and pep and an engaged, zesty delivery. With a star quality that he can only attain when he's off his meds. Which, for the rest of us, is usually the opposite situation.
Rob Long is a writer and producer working in Hollywood. Coming up next, going to the big show, Show West. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. Every year, movie theater owners and their vendors descend on Las Vegas for the annual confab known as Show West. Studio chiefs and execs from the exhibitor chains make keynote speeches, and there are screenings of upcoming releases complete with introductions by big stars. There are seminars discussing best practices, business trends, and new technology. And then there is the trade show, where vendors from around the world hawk pop to popcorn and everything in between. We sent producer Matt Holtzman to Show West to check out that everything in between part that goes into the enjoyment of your movie-going experience.
There are a lot of conventions going on in Las Vegas at any one time, so don't just tail any old guy with a badge around his neck to find your way through the casino. I did, and ended up following a full-figured fellow into the heavy equipment convention. That's a true story. Anyway, after asking for directions, I finally made it to the bowels of Bally's, where I began to see large freestanding posters advertising movies, nacho cheese sauce, and fancy new digital projection technology. Replacing the old system of making physical movie prints was a big topic at this year's Show West, but there was still a lot of old-school stuff being sold at the trade show in the cavernous convention center.
Hugh DeHart with the Little Giant Ladders. We sell ladders that can work over stadium seating.
My name is Carolina Caparelli, and I'm with Lawrence Metal Products, and we do queuing systems.
Cashier number two, please.
My name is Ed McEntee. I'm here with the USA Searchlights, and we've designed searchlights here for cinemas and rental companies.
Movie premieres. And
Yeah, exactly.
Philip Wood, I'm the president of TicketSoft, and we write software for movie theaters.
Walking the floor, you'll find booths for companies that repair torn seats and companies that put LED lights under auditorium stairs. You'll also find guys selling brightly covered flooring and machines for de-stickifying those floors. And then there is the company responsible for all that stickiness. I called this Coke World because it was ginormous, and everything was done up in red. Cute girls wearing lots of makeup poured endless amount of Coke products. Their display is a bit ostentatious, but I guess they can afford it. Renee Ludwig is a sales executive for Coke.
What percentage of theaters carry Coke and its products?
87% of the channel serves Coca-Cola.
To maintain their soda hegemony, they're always looking for new products to expand their line. Energy drinks are coming next. Greg McCall reps another new brand, Odwalla Juice. They almost missed the boat with bottled water.
Our competitor came out with a product about 3 years before us and did a very good job. And a lot of people, I think, weren't sure that people would spend, you know, $1, $1.50 for water.
But the vast majority of customers in theaters and here at Show West stick to Coke. And I sure did, slurping samples until my hand was shaking. In fact, there was enough sugar available everywhere at Show West to easily bring on an immediate case of adult-onset diabetes. For every established concession brand like Nestle's venerable Goobers and Raisinets, there are a few other imitators trying to get a piece of their candy action. And everyone is giving away free samples. It makes the popcorn you smell everywhere at Show West seem downright wholesome. C. Cretors and Company of Chicago makes classic popcorn machines for theaters.
Most people say when they walk into a movie theater, what hits them first is the smell of that popcorn that drives them to the concession stand. So,
Andrew Cretors is the president of Cretors and Company.
Your name is the same name as the name of the company.
That's right, yeah. I'm the fifth generation of our company.
I was going to say it was established in 1885. Did the company do popping machines even back then?
1885 is the year of my great-great-grandfather's peddler's license, where he was actually selling popcorn out on the streets of Chicago. Back then, popcorn really wasn't known. It was a new product. We say that we invented the business of popcorn, and it's really true.
With the whole ethanol thing and the price of corn potentially going up,
yeah.
You think that's going to affect your business?
Oh, it already has quite a bit, because more and more farmers are seeing more profits out of selling corn to ethanol producers. So popcorn, of course, being a crop, is now competing for land. So the cost of popcorn goes up. So it becomes more important to the people who are selling corn to maximize what we call the expansion of the corn. So we developed equipment that actually allows that corn to pop to its greatest potential, thereby maximizing profits because it's reducing the costs to the people who are selling the corn.
Less corn, more volume, basically.
Exactly.
Andrew Cretors brought huge air-popping machines to test at Show West, but of course the vast majority of all popcorn is still popped in oil.
My name is Glenda Barrett, and I'm with Ventura Foods. We basically use four different types of oil for popping corn.
Why would somebody choose one versus the other?
If the customer is health conscious, concerned about saturated fats, then the theater chain will want to use an oil with low saturated fats. But there's a trade-off. Coconut oil has high saturated fats, but it has a longer shelf life. It doesn't gum the kettle. It's crispy. The corn will be crispier than with some of the other oils. It'll stay crispy longer.
You also have a couple of toppings that you offer. When you have a topping that's buttery but not butter, what is it usually made of?
All of our toppings are soybean oil-based. They all contain beta-carotene to give them the color, a buttery coloring. To some people, it may have a very strong butter flavor. It may have a very mild butter flavor, depending on what the population in a particular geographical area is used to. For instance, people in the South, we're used to strong spices, flavorful foods, so we're going to want a strong butter flavor on our popcorn. People who are raised in the dairy areas,
Wisconsin,
are going to want something that tastes more like butter, and butter really does not have a strong flavor.
Not only were there a lot of concession products represented at Show West, there were even people like Bruce Proctor who make concession stands. Proctor & Company of Colorado has been in the business since the early 70s.
Today, more than half of my projects involve lounges and bars.
I was going to say, this doesn't look much like a concession stand. It looks like a kind of a high-end bar that we're with neon lights and glasses and wine bottles.
I think you're seeing evidence of baby boomers and cinema owners trying to bring them back. Frankly, trying to do away with, in some cases, with the kids with the text messaging and chomping the gum and so forth.
Now, I live in Los Angeles, and I'm not surprised to see theaters with these kind of features there, but are you telling me that this is a trend across the country?
It is a trend across the country. We've done it in all points, and they've started out in the major metropolitan areas, and now we're starting to see it trickle down into places like Huntsville, Alabama.
It does actually make a lot of sense, since theaters make their money primarily on concessions, and certainly the price of an alcoholic beverage, you can charge a hell of a lot more for that than you can for a Coke.
That's true.
Just had a thought that a distributor that puts out a really lousy movie should be encouraging alcohol consumption.
Absolutely.
But probably the single most popular product on display at Show West is theater seating, because you can say you're sampling the product when what you're really doing is resting your tired dogs.
Tell me your name and what you're doing here.
John Fennell, the cinema sales manager for Seating Concepts. We manufacture auditorium seating for movie theaters.
Fancy seating, from the looks of it.
Well, everything's really gone upscale. Seating is sort of the last frontier in what we can do to differentiate ourselves in the movie theater auditoriums.
It seems to me that I go into a theater and some of the seats have arms that go up and sometimes they don't.
The evolution was to have a rocker with a lift-up armrest because everyone felt you had to have it. After years of going down that road, now people are saying, you know, maybe the lift-up armrest isn't such a good thing. And I have a lot of customers that are switching back to, they want to have the rocker movement, but not necessarily the lift-up armrest, because then they have to have an usher go through after every show and put them back down, and then you have other concerns of behavior in the auditorium.
For The Business, I'm Matt Holzman at Show West in Las Vegas.
4208, 40 amp. Oh,
okay.
This is a huge volume prior.
Okay.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Our associate producer is Darby Maloney. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.